welcome back. You're watching Stopwatch with me, Julieta Talebi, and tackling your questions in studio tonight are Nick Crail from Ashburton Investments and Jonathan Fisher from PSG Wealth Sandton. If you'd like to send questions to us, please do. You can SMS us your question to 41392. You can email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za or you can tweet us at BusinessDayTV using the hashtag Stockwatch. Jonathan, Nick, nice to see you both this evening. Jonathan, we were talking before we went on air and marveling at how the market has come back, but it doesn't really feel like it. And maybe Nick will explain to us why, because the stocks have been different. But we've actually made back a lot of what we lost, or most of what we lost, in the month of May.
100%. So, I mean, the market hit a high of 59,500. That's the All Share Index, 23rd of April, which was up just over 13%. A month later, 23rd of May, it was down 8.8%. So in 1 month,
through
the month of May,
4 weeks,
it was down 8.8% to 54,000. You know, so I don't know, there's an old saying, sell in May and go away. I don't know if it always works, but anyway. But since then, it's almost recovered everything. So it's up 7.5% in the last 2 weeks.
The thing is the composition of what's got us back to what we had gained prior to May sell-off totally different?
Sure. So it has been a little bit different. I mean, if we go back to the start of May, have a look from South Africa, we had elections. You know, we've now come through that, I would say, in an investment-friendly manner. And yet, did the markets go up? No. Did the rand tank? Yes, it did. Did it have anything to do with the elections? No, not really. It's all to do with what's happening, I suppose, globally. So we've seen significant volatility in the markets. And really what's powered the market ahead in the last sort of week or so really has been the rand hedge type of stocks as the rand blew out. I mean, what is it, trading at 15.17 on Friday,
yeah.
Now back in the 14.80s, it's just it's rough out there.
Indeed it is. So in fact, then today you had a bit of a reversal. So the rand hedge stocks and the mining stocks in particular gave back some of what they'd gained last week. And actually some of the domestic stocks did really well today. Willys, First Rand, the banks. Was that just a matter of making back what was lost in the last couple of trading sessions as the rand had weakened and it strengthened today, and there was nothing in particular behind the gains? I mean, Woolworths is up almost 5%, for example.
What you'll find is mostly interest rate and rand sensitive stocks tend to perform well. Or rather, there's a good correlation between the strong rand and your interest rate sensitive stocks and consumer stocks like banking and like retail. So you tend to find that when the rand firms up, those counters and those sectors tend to do well, and vice versa. So when you have a weaker rand, it goes the other way.
Okay, well, let's talk about Woolies, because there is a question on it, and then we will get to Tongaat, which is the major company news today. And the viewer says, to understand my point of departure before answering, my investment strategy over the next 10 years is to be as aggressive as I can in the equities space to hopefully get good capital growth. A dismal thought considering our market has done nothing in the last 5 years. Now, I'm currently down 50% on my Woolies holding. Do you see hope for Woolies in that it'll give me back my 50% plus growth in the next 10 years and therefore worth putting in the bottom drawer, or should I cut and run?
Next. Right, so let me tackle that. 10 years is a long time, I will say that. However, I do expect that that Woolies actually could make quite a turnaround off these sort of levels. So from a valuation perspective, they've come under a lot of stick over the last couple of years, really post their what appears on paper an abysmal transaction in David Jones in Australia, and their foray on that sort of side. Really, if you have a look at the business, though, and you sort of simplify it out, you could almost write off David Jones as it stands at the moment. Just have a look at their clothing business here, as well as what I really like about the business, which is their food business. Have a look at the valuations that are there, and I think there's certainly upside sort of potential. You then factor in the potential, and it is only a potential, that they stop losing money in Australia and ultimately turn that around. And I think certainly there's a lot of upside to be had.
I mean, but it's not convenient to blame it all on Australia, but it certainly there are other factors involved too, and that is the South African economy. So if it doesn't improve, and if you see GDP growth or GDP continue to contract, and we don't see a big turnaround in the second and third and fourth quarters of this year, surely the new normal is going to put pressure on the food business, which has been very resilient, and Woolies deserves the market rating that it has.
Yeah, so I think certainly in the shorter time, you know, arguably you're right. However, I mean, that food business has been more than resilient over the last 5 years in what has been a troubled economy. Certainly, if we are going to put a bear case down for SA from an economic sort of growth perspective, every retail stock, every food retailer out there is going to come under further pressure. I'm certainly not of the opinion, however, that we're about to enter the start of a, you know, recession, that we're really, it's downward from here. I think arguably the opportunity set is hopefully we're very close to the bottom and that things are going to start correcting themselves. Mm. And a business like that, I think, is certainly one for the future.
Jonathan, what do you think? Do you agree or would you cut and run?
I wouldn't cut and run. I mean, I think they need to make a call on David Jones, if they can turn that round or not. I think we're discussing.
When you say make a call, do you think potentially sell David Jones or exit?
Potentially, potentially. I mean, if they can't make money out of it, you know, how much longer are you going to be pushing it? I mean, we saw, what was it, Famous Brands with Gourmet Burger Kitchen. They've also been struggling. I think I saw an announcement recently that they seem to be getting it right and cutting down branches in the UK. Look, I don't know. They just need to re-strategize that business and see, you know, whether they need to write it off and just focus on South Africa Incorporated or fix that business. So in my mind, David Jones is the big problem for Woolworths. Okay. I agree that the clothing business in South Africa has been tough and is tough. We're seeing it in all the results of the clothing businesses. Besides, I think the Fashini Group, they came out with good numbers. Mm. And Mr. Price also recently, but it's tough. It's tough out there. And I think the shining star in the Woolworths business has been that food business. So, you know, if they can continue with that and just work on building that business, you know, then I think it'll be okay. But you know what? The consumer economy needs to pick up, and the consumer confidence needs to pick up.
Can I just have, I don't want to belabor this whole issue about Woolworths and 10-year investment cases, but when I was talking to people about whether SA Inc. is worth buying, a lot of the fund managers said, you've got to think in 8 to 10-year cycles. And they said, well, you know, we beat ourselves up when we're going through the contraction phase and we think it's never ever going to get better, and does get better, and you have to think long term, which is very hard to do. So is it reasonable, if you set out as an investor, to think in 10-year chunks?
So I think if you have a look at equity markets and stocks specifically, really the markets will react on news of what they believe is going to happen to earnings in, I would say, 18 months' time. So the shortest time distance you really need to be looking is 18 months. And then arguably you can start looking longer term. Longer term becomes less about the current balance sheet and about what's actually happening, and potentially more around the fundamental business case and how that business can take market share, or the pie that it's sort of involved in is going to increase in size in 8 years or 10 years' time. But certainly one cannot have a look at the status quo as it stands today and make an investment case in equity markets based on that.
Yeah. Jonathan? Further thoughts?
Look, at the end of the day, we saw the economy contract, 3.2% last week. So we need a strong economy. Strong economy feeds into stronger profits for companies, basically. So we need confidence, and we need these companies to start making profits. And, you know, you rightly say that just some kind of confidence in the economy, in the market, will spur these companies to start making better profits. And I mean, everyone's waiting. The last 5 years, you know, the South African Incorporated shares generally haven't done well, but we do expect things to get better.
Mm. Okay.
Yeah, I think to quickly add on to that, I mean, you've had a look at how capital within South African companies has been deployed over the last 5 years, and, you know, not without exceptions, but a lot of it has been
badly deployed,
but it's been deployed where? Offshore. Because in an SA environment, you start thinking, well, you know what, this is tough times here. I'm sure it's easier offshore. Not really, it would appear. So in that, I think one also has to, you know, not be too pessimistic as to where we are relative to the rest of the world and the trials and tribulations that we're all kind of going through at the moment.
Yeah, because it would have been arguably better for Woolworths to not do the David Jones acquisition at all, and maybe they would have had experienced slower growth in South Africa, but they wouldn't have wasted 25 billion rand.
I don't think there's any argument that says that was a bad investment. Listen, to sort of give it to management, at least give them some sort of opportunity for that, would be the idea that you're going to try and predict, and investors will do the same, on where the world's going to be in 8 or 10 years' time. But trust me, Woolworths management didn't think that Australia would have gone through and that market would have gone through what it did. Otherwise, they never would have bought it. So their assumptions were wrong, and that happens to the best of us.
Yeah, and so bear that in mind in your 8 to 10 year strategy. Mm. Okay, moving on to Tongaat. And the question is, what took the JSE so long regarding the Tongaat suspension? So the news today that the board asked for the JSE to suspend the shares. They may only lift the suspension in October when we have financial results that we can rely on, which would be the financial year to the end of March. They say, they're working through the interim period, so none of those figures can be relied on anymore. I mean, there's two arguments here, aren't there, Jonathan? That one, you need price discovery, which is, so even though, or you get asymmetrical information coming out, which is appears to be the reason why the board has asked for the suspension, because they just feel that there's going to be too much uncertainty and they want all investors to have the same information.
No, 100%. I mean, look, Tongaat's been in a tough space, obviously. I think that their land business, they're battling to sell and develop the land in the KZN area, in the Mhlanga area where they've got the land. And I think the sugar business has also been struggling. I understand that the sugar price is down, so they're struggling with that, and their balance sheet doesn't look good. So I think it's prudent of management to suspend the share, and I'm hoping that the shares will be unsuspended after the release of their results, which I think they've said is in October.
Yeah.
It's just unfortunate for shareholders that they can't do anything with that. So it'll probably be a much smaller company when it does relist. What can you say? Deloitte with the
auditors, not covering again themselves in glory again. Steinhoff being their former big client. Nick, do you think that the board or the JSE, it's actually not the JSE that suspended Tongaat, it's the board that asked for the suspension. Do you think it's taken too long to happen, or do you think it was right and proper that Tongaat continued to trade while this was all kind of coming out of the woodwork?
So, as you say, I mean, there's numerous sort of things that, complexities, I suppose, that one has to look at. However, if you're going to list on the all share, theoretically, you need to come up with results. The results need to be reliable. And if they're not, then what are you actually trading on? You're trading on what? How many letters are in the name of the share that you're going into? You need information. So arguably, as soon as it actually comes out and it says, you know what, made some sort of mistake or whatever the case is, can't rely on the last year, there's something kind of wrong there. I think there is a case for it to be suspended automatically at that sort of level. Because otherwise, that is generally going to be a run on the share price, and it's not going to because of any sort of fundamental news.
So you think they should have suspended the shares earlier?
So I think there's certainly a stronger case, a strong enough case for that to have happened, yeah.
Okay. Because others would say you don't want to be locked into a company, you want to be able to actually exit
I would completely agree with that, so that's why the complexity comes into it. Ultimately when you're signed up to be an investor in Tongaat, you're not signing up with an understanding that they are going to, restate their financials going back. So as soon as you hear that, you want to be able to get out. However, the reality is, you need to trade on information that is publicly available. And as soon as you know only one thing at that point, and that is that the number's not reliable, you don't really know how much it's not reliable, exactly where the areas are. And so then it just becomes pure speculation at that point.
Jonathan, do you think this is the beginning of the end? Or the end of the beginning, or maybe midway through what I mean is, do you think it's game over for Tongaat, or do you think there might
not
be something to
sell? As a shareholder, you never want to be caught with a Tongaat. You know, so like I say, we hope that they come back to the market. They'll probably come back, I'm guessing, much smaller business. But you know, you see, like with these companies that are suspended for these kind of reasons, where they've fiddled with the books and inflated assets and so forth, it's never good. I mean, we saw it, what was it, African Bank. It's a much smaller company. It's still listed, but not much value there.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's the end, but there's assets there and there's income. They just need to fix the business.
Okay, we'll leave it there for the moment. If you'd like to send questions, please do SMS us or email us, and we'll be back shortly. Welcome back. Let's have a look at what's happening to U.S. markets at the start of this trading week. The S&P up 0.75%, the Nasdaq roaring ahead, up 1.5%, and the Dow Jones just over 0.5% to the good. Across the Atlantic, the FTSE 100 gaining 0.6% today, the CAC 40 up 0.33%, and it is a holiday in Germany, so those markets closed. We had a pretty strong start to the week too, and still with me in studio are Nick Crail from Ashburton Investments and Jonathan Fisher from PSG Wealth Santon. So we were talking about the disaster that is Tongaat, which will be suspended, and onto Sibanye, well, Lonmin, which will cease to exist really. Today was the last day that there was be trade in Lonmin shares. And the question is, it's more, I suppose, an argument saying, should Sibanye not be listed on the PGM indexes and referred to as mainly a PGM miner as opposed to a gold miner? Please ask the panel to discuss this, if it should occur and when. Sibanye always referred to as the gold miner, but it hasn't changed to PGM with some gold. Of course, being Sibanye, Stillwater owning huge palladium assets and now sort of cleaning up in the platinum belt with its acquisition of Lonmin. Comment.
So I think we're sitting at what they are now the largest platinum producer in the world, the second largest palladium producer in the world. Yeah, I think you could drop the gold thing. This is no longer really a gold.
It's hard, I have to say.
I suppose you want to stick to your knitting, being mining and certainly precious metals. But yeah, it's less about gold and certainly all about platinum palladium.
So it's a big bet on a couple of on the PGM baskets. Pretty good timing if you consider when they bought Stillwater being the palladium assets. Do you think the Lonmin deal was a good one? Do you think Sibanye Stillwater is the play that you would want, is the stock that you would want to enter if you have conviction about the future for platinum stocks? Or would you prefer Amplats, Implats, Northam or RB Plats?
So I would stick with the heavyweights, the likes of Amplats and Impala. I just think, look, Stillwater is a good asset, but yeah, I think they've got a lot of debt on their books, I've never really followed Sibanye Lonmin. It's going to be interesting. I do, you know, back to the question on the PGMs, probably is the right thing to go into that sector, but I guess the JC will make a call on that. In due course, in my mind, it all depends what's the bigger part of the business, gold or platinum, but it's probably platinum.
Yeah, it is indeed PGMs. Nick, how do you feel about them? Because Lonmin was just the perpetual failure, really, in the PGM sector on the JSE. Although it did at one point, what was Lonmin's high? It was well over 1,000 rand a share,
I seem to recall. But yeah, it was certainly higher than it was
a long time ago.
It was a spectacular fall from grace, shall we say.
I think obviously if you have a look at it, for starters, they paid hardly anything for it, so that's good. The second element that one would have to look at, and in terms of one wanted to invest, would be quite simply, if you believe platinum and palladium are going to increase in value or retain their value at current sort of levels, or if they come backwards. In a company like this, with the debt that it has on its books, platinum and palladium prices come down, maybe the rand strengthens somewhat. I think that's very close to the end. They're making a big bet. It is very aggressive. If it works out for them, and so far, if we have a look at the Stillwater acquisition, everything worked out in their favor quite favorably at that time for them, and so you can do really nicely. If it doesn't, though, as discussed, then it's spending time with Tongaat.
And no one wants to spend time with Tongaat.
No.
All right. Thoughts on African Rainbow Capital and Stadio, and also what is the best ETF to buy now? African Rainbow Capital, is this one that you look at, Jonathan? They put out a bit of an update today on all their various investments and what they've been up to.
No, I don't really follow it. I mean, what's it? Ethos, I think it is.
Well, they've got, so TymeBank is the banking asset which Ethos has now invested money into. Although, I mean, if I understand this correctly, it's sort of like African Rainbow Capital investing in itself, because they've invested into the Ethos Artificial Intelligence Fund. ARC Financial Services committed 100 million rand. And now the Ethos Artificial Intelligence Fund has put 200 million rand into TymeBank. So I kind of wonder, what's the point? Just... it's a very circuitous way of putting money into your own company.
Yeah, I'd prefer not to talk about that. really, it doesn't necessarily look great. I will say that for African Rainbow Capital, I mean, the idea itself, I'm quite a fan of. If I have a look at the assets, though, I do think there's still some risk actually on that sort of side of things. So you've got a great story to tell, but it's all around delivery and about taking market share. You know, TymeBank again.
About TymeBank in particular.
And a lot of the other assets that they have as well.
Rain, for example, which was the biggest asset actually at one
exactly.
point.
So if you have a look at TymeBank, I mean, they've motored ahead in terms of opening up accounts. I mean, what are we talking, 400,000 accounts? It's less than 5 months old?
Yeah, and aiming to get to 500,000 by July, so that's less than a month.
That in itself is, I think, an amazing sort of achievement. The reality for a business to sort of operate, one needs to make money under these sort of accounts, and certainly they know that they're going to have to step up the level of product, I think, that they offer into those sort of clients over time and do it in a way that keeps the client on board. So again, the idea and the execution so far, it must be say, with regards to TymeBank, has been excellent, but it's very early days. And so you take quite a significant risk when you're investing in a company like this, which is relatively unproven and relatively small, I suppose, assets in the greater markets that they operate within, that they either do very nicely, in which case there's money everywhere, or alternatively fail, and then we know where that ends.
Yeah, I mean, because what were they, 8 rand when they listed? I seem to recall.
I think their net asset value
per share was at least 8 rand.
No, something around there. What was it about?
So now they're trading at about 6 rand. You haven't.
So you've lost money if you've been invested in them, but then again, in our markets, only losing some money is actually a pretty good effort over the last couple of years. You're probably an outperformer. So, you know, the mantra hasn't necessarily delivered itself into share price appreciation yet, and I still think it's early days. It's not one that I'd jump in.
Yeah, okay. What about the gold stocks? Jonathan, last week was a great, they went on a tear, which was fantastic. The panels here on Harmony Gold, is it a buy, keeping in mind there's no dividend?
No.
Or is it just a trade, nice quick in and out?
Yeah, golding stocks, if you can get it right, you make lots of money. I mean, what are we talking? Goldfields was up, 50-odd percent, I think, in 2 weeks.
As much as that.
I mean, it is significant. So if you got in exactly 2 weeks ago, you've made lots of money.
Tell that to the people that were forced to put them in the bottom drawer 8 to 10 years ago,
this is certainly not a bottom drawer kind of stock.
You see,
this
now the gold shares belie that theory, the 8 to 10 year theory. If you bought your gold shares thinking, okay, you know, I'm thinking in these 8 to 10 year cycles, you'd be... I dare say, slightly miffed at this point.
It only depends what you expected out of it. I mean, for starters, we know that you're mining gold that is now getting deeper and deeper and deeper. It is less competitive. Costs increase incrementally to try and get it out the ground. And then it's gold. What do we do with it? Well, not much useful. So, yes, it's a store of wealth and all those sorts of things, but the world is a-changing. Now, is it changing enough that Bitcoin is going to be the new store of wealth? Who knows? But certainly it's not a guarantee that gold is going to maintain its place over the next 8 or 10 or 20 years. So fundamentally, I'm not sure the business case is very strong to start out with, which ultimately says you shouldn't have held it and you shouldn't have held it 10 years ago.
Okay, well, thanks for the cold comfort chat.
Right on time.
Okay, so what would you hold? Oh, Jonathan, anything further to add there?
No, or gold. A wise old man said, you buy gold to trade, don't get married today. When you make a profit, boom, you're out. So that's for trading.
Those market one-night stands.
Yeah.
Right, onto your stock picks this evening. You are, Well, it's a booze and drugs theme tonight.
it's been a tough 6 weeks.
You're getting yourself liquored up on Heineken.
I'll go with Heineken, which is legal. So look, Heineken listed in Amsterdam. It's got a price of €97, PE of 29 times, dividend yield of 1.5%. It's got a market cap of €56 billion. Now, any guesses what that is in rands? R936 billion. Look at that chart since the beginning of the year.
Yeah, that's quite something, especially if you consider that AB InBev is not put on the same performance. But a 29 times multiple, really pricey.
So it's kind of expensive relative to Anheuser-Busch. Anheuser-Busch is on a 24 multiple. But listen, it's a quality business. Just to put it into perspective in terms of the market cap, you've got Naspers, our biggest company, R3 billion market cap, compared to something that's just under R1 trillion rand market cap. So it just shows you how big this company is. Anyway, we like it.
300 billion, surely. No, hang on. Okay, I'm getting confused with my fingers, but you like Heineken. Okay.
So we like Heineken. I mean, you know, talk about historically the group benefited from top line growth and healthy margin expansion. They operate in 70 countries around the world. So the ROE is about 18%, and they're operating on a profit margin of about 15.5%. They grew their earnings in the last year by 23%. That's end of December.
Okay. So
29 PE.
So. Strong on the metrics all around for you.
Yeah.
Nick, on the drugs theme, Aspen. It seems to have broken its 100 rand hoodoo.
Although it's been all over the place in terms of around that 100 rand, over it, under it, over it, under it. I think it's almost exactly the opposite sort of investment case and experience to what we've seen out of Heineken. So really what you have here is a company that, unlike Heineken, which operates in 70 countries, this is in 55, so it's a bit smaller. In terms of market cap, it's a lot smaller, largely because it's underperformed so significantly, but it's in the midst of a transformation. And I think what makes it attractive at the moment is, yes, there's a transformation. It's not going to go anywhere close to the former multiples it used to trade on. But, you know, if you're looking at a forward multiple of probably 7, we just think it's too inexpensive, too much value that's actually there.
What is forward PE now? 7? I mean, people are talking about Aspen being reasonable at a 15 times forward multiple. So.
Yes. So in the midst of this, I mean, make no mistake, it can go down to a 5 or a 6 if it's disappointing data that comes out. So it's not to say it, but if the company survives and turns around successfully, and it's got a management team that's been and has done wonderful things with the company over its sort of track record, then ultimately you're getting it at a bargain sort of multiple at the moment.
Yeah, okay, so take your Aspen pills, wash them down with your Heineken, and have a good Monday.
And the markets.
Nick, Jonathan, thanks very much for joining us this evening. Nick Crail from Ashburton Investments, Jonathan Fishers from PSG Wealth Centon, and we'll be back with Stockwatch tomorrow night at 7:30. On to your stock picks this evening. You are it's a booze and drugs theme tonight.
It's been a tough 6 weeks.
You're getting yourself liquored up on Heineken.
I'll go with Heineken, which is legal. So look, Heineken listed in Amsterdam. It's got a price of €97, PE of 29 times, dividend yield of 1.5%. It's got a market cap of €56 billion. Now, any guesses what that is in rands? R936 billion. Look at that chart since the beginning of the year.
Yeah, that's quite something, especially if you consider that AB InBev is not put on the same performance. But a 29 times multiple, really pricey.
So it's kind of expensive relative to Anheuser-Busch. Anheuser-Busch is on a 24 multiple. But listen, it's a quality business. Just to put it into perspective in terms of the market cap, you've got Naspers, our biggest company, R3 billion market cap, compared to something that's just under R1 trillion rand market cap. So it just shows you how big this company is. Anyway, we like it.
300 billion, surely. No, hold on. Hang on. Okay, I'm getting confused with my fingers, but you like Heineken. Okay.
So we like Heineken. I mean, you know, talk about historically the group benefited from top line growth and healthy margin expansion. They operate in 70 countries around the world. So their ROE is about 18%, and they're operating on a profit margin of about 15.5%. They grew their earnings in the last year by 23%. That's end of December.
Okay. So 29 PE. So. Strong on the metrics all around for you.
Yeah.
Nick, on the drugs theme, Aspen, it seems to have broken its 100 Rand hoodoo. Trading
at
102 Rand.
Although it's been all over the place in terms of around that 100 Rand, over it, under it, over it, under it. I think it's almost exactly the opposite of investment case and experience to what we've seen out of Heineken. So really what you have here is a company that, unlike Heineken, which operates in 70 countries, this is in 55, so it's a bit smaller. In terms of market cap, it's a lot smaller, largely because it's underperformed so significantly, but it's in the midst of a transformation. And I think what makes it attractive at the moment is, yes, there's a transformation. It's not going to go anywhere close to the former multiples it used to trade on. But, you know, if you're looking at a forward multiple of probably 7, we just think it's too inexpensive, too much value that's actually there.
Is that what its forward PE is now? 7? I mean, people are talking about Aspen being reasonable at a 15 times forward multiple. So.
Yes. So in the midst of this, I mean, make no mistake, it can go down to a 5 or a 6 if it's disappointing data that comes out. So it's not to say, but if the company survives and turns around successfully, and it's got a management team that's been and has done wonderful things with the company over its sort of track record, then ultimately you're getting it at a bargain sort of multiple at the moment.
Yeah, okay. So take your Aspen pills, wash them down with your Heineken, and have a good Monday.
And ignore the markets.
Nick, Jonathan, thanks very much for joining us this evening. Nick Crail from Ashburton Investments, Jonathan Fisher from PSG Wealth Centre, and we'll be back with Stockwatch tomorrow night at 7:30.